Hello and welcome to You Set the Tone, the podcast that takes an X-ray to the medical drama show ER. We examine the show with surgical precision and celebrate the high pressure and beating hearts of the show. My name is Sharon.
My name is Ed.
And I'm Sean.
And today on the show, we're talking about season 4, episode 13, Carter's Choice. Mm-hmm. It's me. I'm his choice. End of podcast.
Possibly our shortest episode ever. But I think possibly also our most descriptive.
Thanks.
Brilliant. So if you could do the outro and then we're done.
No, let's be good. Carter's choice, which Carter's, I don't know, choice. Might not be a good one. We don't know. He should have chosen me.
No, of course. Yeah. Of the choices he made, I think the episode has basically focused on the wrong choice when we all know the right one.
Thank you.
It was a roller coaster of an episode, mm-hmm. really. Not as many things as I thought were going to be resolved in this episode were resolved, but an enormous thing comes to a head in this episode. So how do you guys feel about, will we dive straight into John Carter?
I thought start with Carter because it's kind of his... This, I don't know, it feels like it's his episode and then we can branch off. So, you know, it starts with him. We're in his Jeep. We are seeing the snow fall down. We're listening to Smash Mouth's Walking on the Sun, which, yes, I do know all the words to, if you want to know. And it's quite bad, the snow. And we see him kind of get out and step into it and have to walk in and it's just everywhere. It's a blizzard. And he gets into the ER and it's just nothing. It's quiet, isn't it? It's just
one obviously patient.
The snow has stopped. Although somebody has returned, which who we haven't seen for a while. And I don't know about you, but I was like, yeah, Jerry.
Yeah. Jerry's back.
Go, Jerry.
And we learn in typical TV land, we learn that, no, he was always there. He was just around the corner for the last 4 months. You just haven't seen. The poor man has been on nights.
Yeah. Because of his little explodey episode.
Yeah.
I love it. Like, you know, kind of, right. I get that it was pretty bad that, you know, you blew up an ambulance. Yeah, but I said I was sorry.
And before that, I was good. Like, before just I killed the man, I was
just
a good
that small
person.
Episode with a grenade launcher. What?
I mean, who hasn't?
Yeah.
At one time or another, grenade launched on their own places of work. You know, come on, let's be fair to Jerry.
I'm probably going to do it tomorrow.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Cool. We got Jerry back and he's doing this great where he's talking to Carter about how he can speak to Weaver about finally getting off these nights, you know, what's the most reasonable way. And the reason he can kind of have this conversation is because the board is empty. They've got a bumpsicle that is defrosting. That lovely word came back.
It's so horrible.
I know, it's so horrible. And yet it's one of those ones where, you know, it's language that gets used because I know immediately what this is referring to. Yes, it is completely inappropriate, but okay, bumpsicle. I know exactly what that describes and I know what's required to undo that description of that particular unfortunate.
Okay, so you're saying we should send all the bumpsicles that come in to you then because you know how to treat them? Is that what you're...
I have to stand by what I say. You know, I cannot be a hypocrite. So, yes, send
we'll
them all to
publishing,
me.
We'll be publishing Sean's address in the future. Actually on our Twitter, Instagram and on the comments of the podcast.
Perfect.
So, you know, it's quiet basically and... He finds out that Anna's in, so he goes to, you know, go and give her a donut, which I thought was cute. He picked up a donut.
That whole thing is so, it's like, and the way he's looking at it, it's just like, you know.
Yeah.
And I think someone still has some feelings there.
I've got to admit, I just found that whole thing of creeping in when she's asleep a little bit weird.
I knew you were going to say that, Ed. No, I was watching it. I thought Ed's going to not be.
God, if there was ever one person who was going to find creeping up on a sleeping woman strange, it was always going to be you.
I mean, honestly, like, Ed, nothing creepy about it.
Such a snowflake, I know.
I know what you mean. There is something weird, but there's also something really sweet about watching somebody sleep. Like
I see your point of view, but I just cringed.
I think what was cute is he'd gone in and realised, you know, she was quite deep into sleep. So he'd like, he covered her and he was trying to leave her breakfast and leave her. You know, he wasn't trying to, you know, Sleeping Beauty her or anything.
No, I just, but the idea of someone coming into your room when you're asleep just, makes me bite my fist.
I mean, it's not her room, you know, it's a place in the workplace. I don't know.
It's like an instant gut reaction for me of like, don't do that. But I've got to say, Yoshi did look really cute up to on the gurney, didn't he?
And there's something so cute like putting a blanket on you. It's such a moment of like a little bit of affection and care. And, you know, so anyway, he's trying to leave. She obviously wakes up. And they have quite a cute little exchange. We learn that, you know, she helped out with Chase and time has gone on a bit from then, and he's doing well, he's off the stuff and he's obviously being left to his own devices, but he kind of, you know, thanks her and says he's going to go get breakfast, which again is just really, is there anything better than somebody buying your breakfast?
Waking up next to them first.
Well, that did happen. She woke up and he was there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think actually it would be creepier if she woke up and he was asleep beside her. She'd be like, you weren't working last night.
Little spoon next to her.
That's arguably even more strange. But
You weren't working and I locked that door. So how did this happen?
This keeps getting worse. It's lovely. He's just like, let's go and get breakfast. And then, of course, but in traditional ER fashion, he walks into an empty ER and you're like, oh, they're just keeping it clear for the 75 car pileup that's going to happen directly in the ambulance bay the L explodes as well overhead. You're just like, oh, it's quiet. Oh, no.
Hang God, don't say those words. I know, and I thought it was really cute because he, at one moment before he gets into Anna, he walks past Yoshi's asleep. So it's really showing you like they're playing football, Yoshi's asleep on a gurney, you know, nothing is happening. But of course, in true ER style, that means something has to happen. A gunshot wound is brought in. So Anna and Carter forget breakfast, they have to run in. And it was the return of that really, I just was so happy to have the back in the trauma room. Everybody's like hands on deck, music, the spinning.
I was thinking that you were going to say that as well. I was like, we're back in the trauma room.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I've got to say, though, Anna's breakfast order, amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Scrambled eggs, wheat toast. Oh, and dessert, blueberry pancakes.
Yeah. And an orange juice. Same, Anna.
I'm hungry now.
Yes. Oh, yeah. My God. Yes.
I'm going to get some eggs and wheat toast. I don't know why I need to specify wheat toast.
Grand. Just as you go in there, just heads up because there is a GSW in the trauma room right now.
Yeah. Put those eggs down. You're back here.
Although it was funny, right? I don't know if this was a continuity thing, but it was a little bit made me smile because they say, they're having trouble getting here because the snow is so bad. And by the time they've left the room, the trauma's in trauma too. I was just like, well, they couldn't have been that far away.
I thought I'd misheard that. So I'm glad you said that because I thought they said they were on their way. But he was like in there already. And and obviously, you know, it's all action stations. We also learned that blood is low. They're low on kind of blood and they're having to obviously be very careful. This guy's bleeding out quite badly.
Yes.
We learn that he'd actually the rapist that we've been hearing about all these few weeks, this guy basically was a security guard. He interrupted a ongoing possible, you know, moment of rape, and he you know, tried to intervene and basically got shot for his you know, bravery, I guess. And that makes Carter, I think, work even harder. He's really like, well, this guy needs to survive because he's a good guy, a hero, somebody really and they do, they manage to stabilize him, and they finally, they, you know, they're wheeling him out just as Dr. Green kind of comes in, and they lose him again, and
it crashes in the elevator.
And it's just horrible because Carter is so, I mean, Carter like gets up on him, he's doing that, you know, I'm gonna do chest pumps as you move the gurney back, and it gets to the point where he's continuing to try and treat him, and both kind of Anna and Green are like, no, you've got to stop. You've got to call it, and kind of force him to call it, which is sad. And he says, you know, no good deed goes unpunished, which is
unfortunately, in this case,
true in this moment, which is it. And so it's kind of fired everybody up in the ER, you know, they've been having to treat all these kind of rapes all this time, which are horrific and horrible. And then this guy's come in who tried to stop this happening and he's died. So it's really sets that tone of,
yeah,
of kind of all that's kind of coming to a head a little bit.
There's even in this, is obviously a, you know, a sad beginning, obviously not ending. There is a sliver of hopeful news in that, you know, this man unfortunately has died, but it looks like the rapist didn't get away.
Yes.
Yes. We hear that he's been cornered and everybody's quite hyped up and like, oh God, I hope they set the dogs on him and I hope they get him and all of that stuff, which I thought, you know, he has been terrorizing all these people and I can imagine that things would be heightened. And I do often think in these moments, you know, and this does come up in this episode, which we'll obviously discuss when it gets there, but, you know, being that front line of, and having to treat everybody, no matter who they are. You know, we saw Jeannie having to treat the guy who had the KKK, you know, tattoo, and she had to do that. Luckily, that turned out he wasn't what we thought, but, you know.
Yeah, he was a racist in recovery. There's a lot of ethical questions. For Americans, a lot of swear words in this. I counted 3 sons of bitches at least in the first 12 minutes.
Son of a bitch. I mean, that's a goodness.
Son of a bitch. It's a proper sort of, it's horrible. And if you actually called somebody a son of a bitch, then you're implying things about the mother. There's a few damn it's. I mainly counting the sons of bitches. But yeah, it's...
heightened tensions, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Fruity language. In a real situation.
In a real situation, you'd be effing and blind in every other word.
I imagine.
Yeah.
In private moments, they'd be effing and jeffing. I don't think they'd be shouting like the C word.
But this is NBC.
exactly. In the 90s prime as well.
Prime time. Yeah, in the corridors of an ER. Or
yeah, A&E. HBO hasn't. You know,
that's true. Oh, can you imagine ER gone. And HBO?
Oh, my God. It'd be
interesting.
So sexy.
Yeah. Well, that too, yeah. So basically Grey's Anatomy.
Yes.
What was that noise, Sharon?
I went, oh God. I don't like Grey's Anatomy.
Distressed sheep.
I can tell. Oh, you know what? Okey-dokey. I wasted time on it, that's why.
Oh, I see.
When you waste time on something and you're like, come on now.
Riverdale. I made it halfway through season 3 and I just went, no, I really can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it happens, doesn't it?
Van Helsing on Netflix. Start lockdown. I was like, might be dead tomorrow.
This is my thing.
Like, I laugh, but
I switch it off and I say to myself, do I care about these characters? Do I want to know? It's the same thing I do with books. It's like, if I stopped reading now, would I be wondering or do I care? Mm. And if I don't, like, anyway, that's anyway. From that. Back to the proper.
We see
show.
Jeannie arrives at her most bloodthirsty ever.
This is so clearly a difference between our sensibility and an American sensibility and our approach to crime and punishment. Do you know what I mean?
It is a bit, it's kind of like, and I think deliberately when you have the hesitancy that you see all of our regular heroic characters show when they wheel in this 19-year-old.
That's what's horrible. He's 19 years old. Like they go, he's just a kid.
He's a baby and he's destroyed. He has killed.
Yeah.
And then obviously just the psychological trauma.
They bring in the latest rape victim and it showed that he's actually escalating because he used to write with a pen on them. And now this time he's actually used a knife to score it into somebody's skin. And I think, I just thought that added to it as well. This kind of he is escalating, which always happens. You know, they think, oh, I can get away with this. I'm going to push it. I'm going to put, you know. So again, you know, that's layered in there. And by the time he comes in, and again, it's another, you know, it's another one. We go back into the trauma room, but this time everybody is basically, nobody wants to do it. Well, then first we learn that he's coming in and Mark has to say to him, because everybody's like, I don't want to help. I don't want, you know.
Yeah.
And then that he wheels in and Mark's like, you have, you know, this is our job. This is what we have to do. Everybody has to go in. Still, even when they're in there, they're all hesitating and not really, they're not moving fast enough. You know, they're being very like, and I always about people who have to treat, I don't know, when I think about like the terrorists in London, I remember, you know, them being, some of them being wheeled in, or the one in Glasgow was like wheeled into a hospital and as a doctor, knowing this person caused destruction, but having to put that aside and go, this is a human being and my job is, and that is difficult. And
this is the Hippocratic Oath, isn't it? Do no harm.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. I think I've heard that the Hippocratic Oath isn't really a thing doctors say. It's not like they have to say this at their viva voce or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's funny because I was asking another friend of the show, Dr. Adriano, just asking him, because he's now a PhD, but he was a practicing doctor in Italy. And I just said, have you ever treated someone you knew to be a criminal? I know that's a very simplified version of what happens here. There's a lot going on around it, in that we know, you know, it's, even so, they don't actually, yes, the lad was shot, but at the same time, surely innocent until proven guilty still applies.
You should, yeah. But I think in the heightened moment of him being called the rapist, being brought in, you know, and knowing all the things, and knowing the guy died in the morning, knowing all the things that have been happening, all that stress and pressure of, I guess. So, you know, we have this moment where Green has to leave because, you know, there's another case he has to go to. That takes Malik. Malik says, thank God, kind of, I don't want to be in this room. Yeah. And they're all trying to obviously help, you know, make sure this guy is losing blood. So we know there's a shortage. We've been told there's a shortage. Tunish holds up that, okay, we've got this much left. And Carter makes a decision to auto-transfuse, which is obviously use the blood that's already come out into the, I forgot what it's called, you know, that little kind of plastic boxy thing.
They call it the hemostat or something like that.
Maybe, I don't know. It's got a name and I can't remember. She did say it, but he basically uses that to transfuse. And Anna is furious. She is not happy about this decision at all.
Do you know what annoyed me more?
Yeah.
Is he tried to deny it.
Yes.
That annoyed me. I mean, Carter goes on a journey spoiler, yes, he does finally admit, I know full well what I was doing. But he does what Carter sometimes does, is he gets on his high horse and he's like, no, absolutely, I didn't do that. No, not a chance. Not Carter, you did. We've never seen you do this with another customer. How often am I going to call these people customers?
Do you work for Synergix?
I do, actually, yes.
I knew it.
I wish I could do a Clancy Brown impression, but my voice, which is low enough, is still nowhere near low enough.
Honestly, that man.
And
that is one of the things about Carter. One of his flaws is that kind of straight off defensive, straight off, I'm right. What is good about him is that he will take time to reflect and learn and go, you know what, hands up, because I'd rather that than just him lean further and further into I'm right and you're wrong. We did miss a moment, though, I have to say. We missed a perfect Carter moment that happened earlier where he finally had gone out to get breakfast. And when he comes back in all smiling and happy, he slips up on the floor.
The best fall I've seen in a long time.
It was like, I was quite impressed with that.
Yeah.
Quite impressed. Well done, Noah Wiley. That was some proper stunt. Where I'm assuming it was Noah Wiley. I refuse to believe it was anybody else.
Nobody else.
To me, it looked like it because it was literally there. They just went. There was no time to edit to put somebody else in.
Yeah, and they didn't cut away from it and then go, exactly. Oh, he's him on the floor. And it was brilliant because it was like, oh, there's that. I love when they do these little moments because, you know, he's getting better and better in his job and getting more status. And every so often they go, hang on a minute, he's still this little kooky human being who's clumsy as anything. So I just thought that was a really funny moment because he just like fell on the floor. And also, Carol enters at that point and she just kind of looks at him and carries on, which again, she's just like, of course, he's Carter again.
Of course he's down. There we are.
We're in the trauma room. He does that. Anna's obviously very annoyed. He keeps trying to talk to her after she's not having any of it. He even forgets that he'd asked her. Chase turns up, who looks terrible, you know, which I thought
he looks terrible, but more corpus mentis.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know, like, and in this scene, I kind of like, all right, okay, fair play. He's able to make a dark joke, but a joke nonetheless, where it's quite self-aware.
Yeah.
Where he says nothing about a crack on some bourbon, I think he says, couldn't fix. And our Carter goes, that's not very funny. Personally, I thought, like, you know, listen,
I was like, oh God, if I was an addict. Yeah, that would be me.
And yeah, it's like, in this scene, it's like, okay, all right. Now, listen, addiction is a journey, but at least he's got over the detox. That was always going to be a huge barrier.
Yeah. I mean, yes. That's it, isn't it? And and he's here, you know, Carter said to him, come in, even though Carter forgot. Chase came in for whatever the treatment is or whatever it was that Carter needed him. So it shows, again, he's trying and he's on a, he's on the path, which is great. But he's the one who basically kind of pushes Carter to go after Anna, because Anna kind of walks away. He says, oh, you know, I'll take you out for drinks. And Anna says, no, I've got to go, and kind of looks at Carter in this I hate you way. And and Chase says, you know, go after her, otherwise, if you don't go after her, I will. Which I don't doubt he would, you know, do that, because he just is very much that kind of guy. And that's where we have this, you know, Carter runs after Anna and she doesn't want to talk to him. And it's cold outside. He hasn't got his coat. And she shouts at him. She says, look, okay, finally, yeah, you did that. And I don't think that's right, because when the guy came in this morning, you know, he was bleeding out and you used all the blood. This, we had blood and you didn't use it. And I think it's because of this, the fact that he, you know, is a criminal or a rapist or whatever.
Yeah.
And Carter's very like, no, no, no. And she gets fed up and just walks away. And then when she gets home, there he is. He's waiting.
It's a bit like, it reminds you of The Emperor's New Groove. When so when Kuzco and Pasha get to the palace, and Yzma and Kronk are waiting for them, and they're like, how did you get here first? Like, well, Kronk, how did we get here first? I don't know. It really doesn't make any sense when you look at it.
That is true. I did think that.
I did wonder, like,
how are you there? And I thought, well, maybe she went somewhere after work. I don't know.
She's wearing tracksuit bottoms, so I figured.
It would have been good if they'd maybe put groceries or something in her hand to be she went laundry shopping, or something. Just something. Yeah. But instead, you know, Carter's magic. Maybe he used his private jet. He has got the money.
Well, that is possible. Yeah.
Also, he drove and she was on public transport, and sometimes, you know, driving is a lot quicker, isn't it? So maybe she took an hour for like a 15 minutes. I don't know. Magical is all I'm saying. He just appears there.
As I said, it doesn't make any sense. But yeah. We guess Carter managed, like, she kind of looks at him and he's like, yeah, okay, yeah, I did exactly.
He has a bottle in his hand. He looks like he's drinking a bottle.
It's something anyway. Yeah.
He does. And he looks very, it's obviously affected him. And not only does he apologize, but he really has a moment of vulnerability where he goes, did I do wrong? Like he really is questioning it. He's like, I know it's wrong, but also I had this impulse. Does that make me a bad person? Does that make me wrong? And I think that is one of the big ethical things, isn't it? You know, because at the end of the day, as much as we like to be like, we are human, you know, we are the doctors, we need to treat everybody the same, we are human. We've seen it with Mark, you know, things affect give us biases, give us things to kind of go, hang on a minute, I might treat this person differently.
That's it. In theory, in its most basic theory, every single person on the bed is a slab of meat, and it's your job to keep that meat alive. And it never works out that way, ever. So
this is what I was talking to Adriana about, is that you can't discriminate against anybody by allowing your personal views. I mean, this is from the General Medical Council's advice. You must not unfairly discriminate against patients or colleagues by allowing your personal views to affect your professional relationships or the treatment you provide or arrange. You should challenge colleagues if the behaviour does not comply with this guidance. So basically, Adriana said it's irrelevant to know for his treatment. At the end of the day, you're treating a person.
Yeah, you're not treating the fact that they are whatever you are treating, and the bleeding that he's coming in.
Exactly. That's why I felt so uncomfortable when Malik and everybody were giving Carter a sort of hard looks because he saved him, but couldn't save the security guard. It's just
like, it's, what was he supposed? Well, I mean, not what was he supposed to do, but he tried. He tried his absolute hardest to save the security guard. He wasn't able to. That's not his fault.
And it's kind of, I guess, what I think is it Mark at the end says, you know, we saved the rapist, hell of a world. You know, it's that, you know, none of it matters in the sense of how good you are in life or how bad you are. The cookie will crumble the way it crumbles. They weren't able to save the good guy in this, and they were able to save the bad guy. You know, that's And I see what you're saying, and I get it, but I also really understood from kind of their point of view
how
difficult it must have been. And, you know, they were, they're human too, and they're just acting out of whatever they're feeling in that moment, the same way Carter is, and later Carter reflects, and hopefully they will. And it, I mean, it's hard, you know, it must be really tough, because I don't know how I would be if somebody came in that I'd been reading about or hearing about, who'd been terrorizing us. And all of a sudden it's up to me to save them. That would be, it wouldn't be straightforward. Right, here we go. I'm in. I can imagine it being tough. So that's kind of Carter's story. So that was his choice. His choice was to auto-transfuse, and it opened up a part of him that he probably hadn't maybe thought about before. You know, it was a decision in his life that now he's opened up a world. He knows a bit more about himself. He's gone, okay, that's how I reacted in that situation. So we've got growth, which I like. And it's quite sweet, because at the end, Anna does sit next to him and holds his hand, and they kind of, it's a cute moment, because it's like, I don't know, the best kind of people in your lives are the people who can tell you where you've done something wrong, but stick by you anyway. And still, I think that's what's nice. Give you that room to grow.
So should we go to Mark? Doesn't get much this episode. No,
because well, I was gonna say we could do Mark because it's quite short.
It is short.
We have basically, you can nearly sum up Mark's episode with, Mark, will you ever just sit down and have a chat with Cynthia, will you?
Do you know I words?
I felt for her. I really feel for her. Oh,
me too.
I do with this. Because... just be honest, Mark. Will you just, look, this is not working for me. Sorry.
Like, he was so not honest from the beginning. And Doug warned him. He was like, this isn't the kind of girl you do that with, because she is, she will read everything into everything that you do, you know. And the fact that also you haven't, it's not like you've been honest with her. You know, you brought that diamond necklace. You've you've laid it on quite thick in other ways, you know. It's just horrible. Because so she, you know, he comes in and she's there and she says, oh, by the way, my lease is up. Kind of hinting at, you know, I'm always at yours, my lease is up, they're trying to ask for more money and they're making me sign on for longer. And his first reaction to that is, I'll pay, which...
it's still like, problematic, like...
Not what she's saying in any way at all.
Suddenly there's a reciprocal financial relationship going on.
Like, and like, Mark, just either cut it off, have her move it, like, if... she's going to be dependent on you if you set this up in this way anyway. I'm paying your rent. Like, okay, but you won't live with me. So what is she, a kept woman now? Like, how does this work? What is the situation you're trying to... It's the thoughtlessness of the situation.
And, you know, Cynthia's upset and she cries to Doug. Poor Doug. Doug says to Mark, you know,
he's so out of his depth.
You've got to deal with this, because... she's crying on me and you've led her on. And later we learn she left crying. What I love throughout this episode though is Mark is there doing stupid things and Chuni's behind him the whole time, like shaking her head like, you are an idiot. Like everything, words coming out of your mouth are just ridiculous to me. which I thought was quite funny.
I love that. And Shuni, like, she knows Mark, if not better, then certainly biblically more than some of the other people in the ER. So at least, like, you think, you know, she kind of has the wherewithal to be like, you need to cop your guff together here now, Mark. This is ridiculous. Like,
cop your guff. I haven't heard that before.
Cop your guff.
I like it.
Is that a Sean, or is that...
That is Sean desperately attempting not to swear.
Oh, okay. I like it.
Thank you.
You say sugar on toast when there's a kid around.
Oh, I love it.
Which is what my aunt used to say. She goes, sugar and see me on toast. She goes, see me go.
Shut the front door. Yeah.
Shut the front door. That's a good one, actually. I like that. Shut the front door. Yeah.
Oh, my favorite is in Arrested Development when he says, something kid, he goes, you country western loving person. And there's a good one in Veep actually, that where he says he's on the phone and he's like, I'll come in there and I'll hurt your cock tail napkin because he's a little girl. And he goes, yeah, you heard what I said. Anyway, sorry. So, yeah, I mean, Mark is in this bit of hell, I think. He's self-made hell, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Green, you know, she's left crying in the middle of a shift, which is not a good sign. Mm-hmm. He's heard from Doug that she was crying on him. He needs to, I mean, he does say to Doug, I'm going to have that conversation. And Doug looks so skeptical. And I was like, yeah, I'm with you. Because how long has he been saying, I'm going to deal with this? I'm going to deal with this.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
it's not a good look on him, is it?
Like, I don't remember where this is going. So if she walks in the next episode and she's living with Mark, I won't be surprised.
Yeah. And he's married her. Or like,
yeah.
Not far off.
It's not. Yeah. Yeah. It gets worse before it doesn't end. Great.
It can't at this stage. there's never going to be an amicable ending to this one.
Yeah.
The easiest way for Mark to get out of this is if he calls her time of death. Like, that's the only way he's not going to have to deal with her tears.
And I imagine that is what he would prefer to do on top of actually having a conversation
at this stage. Yeah.
He's also kind of, I don't know. I thought he was a bit crap up. In the, you know, I feel for Weaver sometimes because she really has to drive a lot of the change and a lot of the things. And okay, she didn't make the best choice with this SPG or whatever, but she comes to him for support and he's very much like, well, first he says, I want to read up the stats. And it's like, well, you could look into that yourself, which, you know,
I've been around for a while, these stats.
Yeah.
Kerry's been talking to you about it for weeks.
Exactly. And also before it happened, before it went through, maybe you should have taken it upon yourself to read the stats anyway. And then he says this thing. So finally he says, you're right, the stats aren't great. And she says, will you come with me to this board meeting? And he says, as long as I don't have to speak. And I thought, this is Mark in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The difficult conversations he will skirt away from and run away from. And he doesn't want to. It's just so interesting because he, you know, he's so strong as a leader and as in so many ways as kind of a man. And then this comes along. And he's just crap with women and he's crap with difficult conversations and he's, you know, not great with confrontation, all of that stuff. And it's like, God, oh, Mark, come on.
I do like it when they're talking to, when Kerry first approaches Mark and says, you know, as one of the other attendings, he said, oh yeah, we'll get the other attendings in. I'm like, who are the other attendings? It's these doctors who float around the night background. Shift
with Jerry.
Yeah, exactly. It's these doctors who float around in the background, like, you know, Better Call Saul type situation. There is a different show being filmed the other way around.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, like, who?
Yeah, no one. Yeah. Like, that's it. Like, there isn't anyone, because who are the next down? There isn't.
There isn't.
Carter? No.
Potentially at this stage,
Doyle,
yeah.
Who has evaporated.
Who has died, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's gone back onto being a policeman. Who knows where she is?
I was just thinking, like, when they were working on the rapist and they were being so lackadaisical and so... she'd have just executed him.
She would have shot him there and then. She would have pulled out the gun that she keeps in her, you know, behind her medical lab coat and she would have just shot him there and then.
Yeah, yeah.
Got the problem solved. And
she'd just be sitting there like, he's flatlining, doctor. He's flatlining. Let's wait and see. I think he might bounce back.
Like, chambers around.
They're there, touching his head. Yeah. They're there. It'll get better.
He's coding. Is he, though?
Is he? So your idea of coding is very different to mine.
And I mean, I'm the doctor here, so I think I know better than... I worked in a busy hospital elsewhere, so I think I know what coding is, guys. Come on.
Exactly. The nurses are always like, we are so going to get the blame for this.
As we kind of touched on Weaver, I think, should we go there next and just kind of...
Why is there Laura Innes? Sorry, they're completely blanked on that for a second. She's great in this episode. She's great.
She changes gear so well.
Yeah.
Because Kerry is able to change gear because she's phenomenal. Yeah. I know she's not popular, but she's a brilliant doctor.
Oh, she is. Exactly.
She is. And so at the beginning, she waits for Anspar. The board had voted over Synergic. She wants to know what the outcome was. She's basically stalking him in the car park.
With his massive hat.
What was
with his newsboy hat, which could get, you know, Sky TV.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I love it.
It's a good look. You know, Anspar says, I'm sorry, you know, the board voted for it. And
yeah.
he's also quite annoyed at Weaver because he's very much like, you sold this to them.
Yeah. She brought it to them.
You brought it to them and you sold it. And you told me all the attendings were fine and everything was brilliant. And now you're now turning around and saying no. And having to walk that back for the board is not an easy thing. It's, you know. And so he basically says to her, it's up to you. If you want to do a U-turn, it's on, it's kind of, you have to get the attendings yeah. turned around. And that's the only way this is going to kill this deal. Mm-hmm.
I have to follow my sword? And he's like, it's your sword. I was like,
I mean, it is.
Yes. It is. Like, I just also love the imagery of it. The language.
Got it. Yeah.
Right. Your problem.
Like, and that's what, and you see a bit of that in Carrie as well, that even in this situation where she is doing the right thing, she still is trying to cover her back. And I don't blame her. I don't blame her, because if you, in a way, you could say the easy thing is right, just hands in the air, whatever. It's like, yeah, but she has a lot more going against her than Mark does, for example. So they're both heads of the ER.
Yeah.
She's a woman. Let's just be absolutely blunt about it. And if she is seen to be made like a fool, what's that going to say for anyone else?
Yeah.
You know?
Especially if it gets out that her and him have been seeing each other, you know? That is such a dangerous... And actually, it was really interesting to see that kind of lapse in somebody like Kerry, who's always so rigorous and so thorough and so professional, to have had this real... kind of blurring of this world, and he did kind of whirl her off and she didn't do her due diligence, which is not like her at all.
No.
Whisked off to the Caribbean.
Exactly. Who knew she could be bought for that? Like,
I mean, so cheap, just cheap. You know, that's Carrie all over.
She'll sell her soul for less.
Because we don't, like, she's never really presented as a romantic or, I suppose, sexual being in that way, which has been, to be honest, one of the strengths of the character, in that she has always been strong leader, has not been forced into silly plot lines where, you know, I've fallen for a patient or that kind of nonsense. Mm-hmm. And then when you have this is her first romance story. Obviously, we've seen her with her boyfriend.
Yes. Yeah. We saw that one episode and he'd come and she ran to him and everybody was very, you know, it was played up.
Yes.
It was really played up for, whoa, she has
a It was man. Shock value. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then in this, so, you know, there's this whole the flirting and, you know, he's all right. Yeah. We've known for a couple of weeks now. He's a bit dodge going on here, but they seem more or less a good match.
Mm.
And in this, I still see the charm. I still see the charm of Ellis West. You know, when he walks up to her in the car park after, you know, so she's trying to rally support. You know, she's trying to cover her own back. Yes, Mark, if we get up and
speak. If we, I thought that was
exactly
brilliant.
What Anspar said.
If we all go. Anspar
said, Kerry.
She knows how to play things, play situations and play people.
But you know what? Good on her. Go for it.
Yes. Absolutely.
You know, you're in this world, you understand it. You play it. You play that game.
And when he confronts, when Ellis confronts her, first of all, in the ER, and he confronts her, and she, you know, we don't see Kerry break very often, and she comes very close to breaking here, because I think this is the closest she's going to get to saying, I was wrong, when she says, you underestimated me, and you were right to do it.
Yeah.
But you won't do that again.
Yeah.
And you can hear the emotion coming behind her. And again, that is because at this stage, we have 2.5 seasons of effectively stoic Kerry. Now we have, obviously, with the Genie storyline, there is a lot of that, but effectively stoic Kerry,
very in control of her emotions.
Very much so. And yeah, Sharon, it's like you said as well, like this, there is more to it than this, but this man came in, took advantage, certainly professionally, like, and as she said, you used me so you could bully Synergex into the ER, into County General. You won't do that again, and that'll be a fight. And I think I would love to believe, I was going to say I choose to believe, no, I would love to believe that in this moment, Dr. Ellis West comes out over salesman Ellis West and goes, all right, listen, I know when to draw the line here. This is, there's only so much I'll do for a sale. And no, this is lack of, as opposed to the sheer war he would have to fight tooth and nail to actually get into County General at this point. Yeah. But yeah, as Kerry walks away and it's Carol comes up and, you know, she's talking about the patient she's dealing with. And Kerry, are you okay? Talk to me about the patient, Carol.
Yeah, straight back. Straight back.
That change of gear. And then she goes and talks to Mary, who I guess we'll get to in a minute. She is so brilliant.
So good.
With those patients. And with Mary, she is so sweet and effective and knows exactly what to say to get Mary back on side, to get her to stay.
It was as well one of those moments where you don't, with Kerry, you don't always know how she's going to be. Will she be Mrs. Play by the Rules? No.
Yeah.
This person has to go to their maternity ward. This has to happen. We have to call the social, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
Or is she going to do this? You know, it was like when, you know, Carol was stealing the supplies and she caught her and you kind of for a moment thought, oh God, and she went, it's fine. Like it's carry on. And we were like, oh, okay. So it's those moments as well that get played really well.
Yeah.
I really, really like seeing the femaleness of her, which sounds weird. Like
and that feminine, kind of, I get
the
you.
Feminine yeah. woman type, you know, being the romantic person, being the one who was looked at for the romance side of it, I guess. The softer kind of more what you'd put with for a woman, like all the other women who kind of come in and out of the ER, you know, there is a lot of romance relationships, a lot of kind of, and we hadn't seen that with Kerry straight off. You get it normally with all the other kind of characters. We didn't see that with Kerry and she was always kind of this. So to have her, like when she's shouting at him about, you know, he bamboozled her and all that, she's also saying to him, you know, I believed you and you were hurting me and I feel rejected and I feel used, you know, and it's that the romantic side. And I found, you know, Ellis quite gaslighty at the end in some ways, because she was very much like, you have done this. And maybe maybe there was attraction and love and whatever. Mm. Maybe, you know, maybe he does see her as this very great woman and all the stuff he says to her. Yes. But he can't deny the fact that he was also, that part of that relationship was that he was in this
transactional almost.
Transactional, exactly. And so when he was being all like, don't ever think it wasn't that, it's like, well, don't make her think that that's in her head, because that is definitely a part of it. It might not be the whole part of it, but it was. And you need to put your hands up to that. And I also found him a bit, like you said, you know, I think him pulling out wasn't because of this, oh, I did it for you and I didn't want to jeopardize our thing. I think it was he was scared of the war he was going to get rather than it actually being
right. Oh, okay.
Him being like, I care about you. I didn't believe him, but I haven't believed him the whole way through this. So
I see, I hear what you're saying. I thought on a certain level it was quite sweet, and I quite liked, this is the only person who ever underestimated them, you know, whoever underestimated you was you. And that's, I think that's a massive compliment in a way. Do you know what I mean? It's like saying, you've always sold yourself short, but you're more amazing than you think you are.
I didn't like that. For me was really creepy, because it felt very much like it was a real, you could say that to anybody. Like I felt it was really manipulative. Like everybody underestimates themselves. It's such a, oh, this is all on you as well. You underestimate. I didn't do it. Yes, you did. You had a part in it. Stop trying to gloss over it and act like you weren't there and tell her that what she thinks and feeling isn't valid, is how I read it personally. But
fair enough. I definitely see your point of view. The whole relationship is weird, not weird, but it's uncomfortable, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And he might have meant all that stuff, but unfortunately, it's not clear cut, and that doesn't always come through, because he might have meant all that stuff, but he also has to take into account that there is this transactional moment. There is a thing where he has kind of been very, you know, he did put the hard sell on, he took her to Barbados, and he can't pretend that that was all because he thought she was this amazing woman. I just don't think that, even if he believes that, I think that that's not the full truth. I don't think he sees himself.
I agree. I think in this point, it's more a negotiation that he did not come out on top of rather than anything in his point of view, anything more sinister than that, whereas she's like, I mean, if this was a negotiation, you could have used more ethical methods. So I don't think ethics entered into his outside. He just went, oh, I took a punt on it and I didn't work. But I almost believe it when it's not personal. You know, and this maybe is where I'm sitting on the fence of both of you. That I think maybe it wasn't really ever meant to hurt Kerry in any way, nor was it ever really meant to build her up either. What? You know, it was just like, okay, next hospital. So,
yeah.
And the thing that frustrates him the most is just like months of work went into that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't doubt that he had real feelings for her. I just think that his intentions initially, especially, weren't the best. And,
oh, sure. Yeah.
Right.
And also, I do feel like he laid it on quite thick for her to not look at. I'm not saying that was her. She definitely has her faults in this, and she should have done her due diligence no matter what. I can't speak due diligence.
due diligence.
But it's murky, and that's what it is. I think I don't think there's a right wrong, or I think it's murky, and they should have acknowledged that and talked about it more. So shall we kind of go to Doug Carroll, and kind of then we can also bring in Mary and Weaver and Jean.
Yes.
So as we say, you know, Carroll asks where Doug is, so it just shows that they're not obviously together at this moment, whatever is going on, we don't know, but they're not really together. Greg, unfortunately, obviously has to turn up to
at exactly the wrong time.
Exactly. He brings in the latest kind of victim of the rapist, and he's obviously still very affected by all this, so he stays in the trauma room for ages, and he gets kicked out, and then him and Carol are face to face at one point, and Carol can see he's affected. And at this point, I was very much like, I really think he needs a new, different job. I really don't. I'm not saying that people shouldn't ever be affected.
But I know what you mean. Like, this is, you can't go to pieces like this
every time.
This is, again, where we kind of have to, and again, I mean, in theory, you go into these professions because you want to help people.
Yeah.
And yet you need to look at it like a slab of meat on a bed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for all of the good reasons as well as the bad, you know, like if you're going to go to pieces every single time that something bad happens to someone.
And if you can't get past that, then maybe you shouldn't be doing it. Like, this is years and years ago, I really, really thought about being a social worker, and I really wanted to help people. But the idea of the day to day of seeing the sad stories, my mom's a social worker, that's why it kind of came up. And my mom's very good at shutting the door on the stuff. She's able to kind of really be very professional and look at stuff in a way that I never was. And I actually went and kind of did some work with her for a bit to see, and realized I can never shut this out. I will never be able to do it. And for me, that was like, okay, that's not for me. That's how I felt when watching him. I thought, if it's getting to you this much, you know, because they were just standing around the room, and I was like, excuse me, have you not got other, aren't you an emergency service? You don't really have time to be hanging around for 7 hours. But so we have this moment with Carol and Greg, and they're chatting about that fact that he's obviously very affected and very sad, and Doug sees them.
Yes.
And it's horrible, because Doug actually at this point, doesn't know who it was that she kissed, but he has a good idea. Obviously, when he sees them, he kind of storms off, making Carol run kind of upstairs, because he goes to Peds upstairs because they're short-handed, and he hasn't obviously got a lot going on downstairs, so he kind of comes upstairs to to help them, and Carol's waiting for him, and he does this really passive aggressive, childish, I'm not going to even talk to you, just I'm going to ignore you as I walk down the corridor, which I thought was a bit like, come on, I know you're hurt, but
yeah.
And then they have this exchange where he starts saying to her, is that the guy, and what are you still doing with him, and you've humiliated me, and he's very angry, and I thought, gosh, this is actually your ego, isn't it? When you say you've humiliated me, you're telling me you care more about what people think of you, that yep. is what you're saying, rather than I'm upset because I thought we were on this page and you yeah. kind of taken my trust or whatever. And I know he's just trying to hurt her, and you say things you don't mean when you're angry, and they kind of have this fight where she comes back and says, points out all the people times and the people he slept with and the times he kind of humiliated her. And I don't know about you guys, I didn't know how I felt about either of them in this. I kind of felt sorry for them both, but I also felt annoyed at them both for things they said to each other, and which I think is what makes it great, because there's no kind of clear cut. But
yeah, like there's you know, I feel like she is feeling, you know, that she has kissed somebody else, and she's confused about how she feels about Doug, and that's manifesting as anger.
Yeah.
And Doug then is obviously feeling a bit righteous, because he is, quote unquote, the wronged party in this case.
Yeah.
And so for, you know, that's where he's coming out like, well, hang on, I am the victim here, and you're standing over there with Greg, and, you know, is rubbing it in my face and everything. And, you know, so he's in the moment. Carol is sort of both in the past and trying to look ahead, so she's anywhere yeah. but the moment.
Yeah.
And there is that. A problem yeah. with communication here, because, you know, she turns around and she's like, you know, well, what about this time, and he's still like, yeah, but you were standing there with Greg there a second ago. She's like, that's not the point, Doug. I mean, yeah. I'm sorry for that, and I have apologized for that, but that's not the point, Doug. The point is, you know, you've gone from womanizer to slapping a ring on me in the middle of the ER, which yeah. you both know I want, and you also, sorry, massively manipulative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it might have been for the most noble and nicer of reasons, but it was massively manipulative.
Yes.
You know, and these things take a while to settle. Mm-hmm. And he was steamrolling.
Yes. Through. And he wasn't listening. It's not like she didn't say to him a million times, no, I'm not ready. Not yeah. yet. No. Don't get a ring. Don't do this. And he just, he didn't listen. So I really see what she was feeling, and she felt trapped and she felt scared. And it must be tough when you're saying to somebody, oh, by the way, these are the things I need, and they're just not listening. So what can yeah. you do? So I completely get why she has kissed Greg, or, you know, whatever. And it's not so much about Greg. It's more about herself and thinking, is she ready or whatever? But then I also really felt for him, because, you know, he just wants to marry her, and yeah. and she has hurt him. You know, it must be horrible to hear, you know, hear that, see them be apart from her. But then she says something, and I thought this was interesting. She says to him, the reason you're annoyed is because you're not getting what you want. You want to get married, and you want to steamroll me into that kind of thing. And and then she says, you know, I need time. I need one thing I've ever asked you for, and it, all I want is some time, and you're not giving that to me. And I thought that was really important, because it feels like the first time she's actually gotten through to him, because yes. it seemed like he listened for a moment. That's the first time he's really heard her, actually. And I really believed her in that moment. I really believed, you know, she felt trapped, and she felt really unhappy that she'd done what she'd done, but yeah. also, listen to me, you're not listening to me.
Frustration boils over. Sorry, Ed. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was going to say, I've got the quote from our friend IMDb. So the first of all is the brilliant quote where she's having a go at him, saying, what about this person? What about that person? She said, I'd have to do the entire Bulls lineup on the damn admit desk before I even began to be equal with you. And okay, she's having a go, but that was a great line.
Yeah.
But then the next bit, she said, I've spent years of my life changed to fit your needs, working around your schedule, your insecurities, your inability to commit. Well, you know what, Doug? It's not all about you. I know that may come as a shock, brackets, crying. If one of you could do some crying. I said crying, not whatever that was.
Sob. Dramatic sob.
Sharon, you nailed it, obviously.
Thank you.
But a relationship is give and take. Two people's equals, and right now I need something. So you can grow up and accept it, or you can go on being the same selfish, self-centered bastard I've always been, and refuse to give me the one thing I've asked you for. And I was like, go on. And also, that's two bastards in this episode as well.
Wow.
You are obsessed with the swear words in this episode.
You're just gonna it's just so bizarre because they go, like, they'll go as far as crap.
Yeah.
Mm. And there's one episode where Mark says shit, but that's yeah, Mark. it's way in the future, and it's a bit, yeah, it's that episode. But do you know what I mean? So it just feels like I've only just noticed all these for Americans, you know, swear words, all the bastards and sons of bitches and stuff. It's I just thought I picked one.
It's funny because they're actually so much more, they're really a lot more pious over there with their
very Puritan about
very purist about language. Yeah. Like you often see they'll come on like something like Graham Norton and they'll be like, oh, I just swore sorry. And he's like, no, yeah, you can do that here. And
that's true, like, actually, yeah.
10:30 on BBC One, F and Jeff, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, because I think our watershed is 9. So you know, you can after 9 o'clock, you can pretty much do what you want, which is what happens. So
and it's I think we've discussed this before. It's so strange as well that you will have a show like The Walking Dead mm-hmm. where a person's entrails will be thrown all over the road.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet anything stronger than shit is censored.
Yeah.
Or just not written into the script.
And that's why I think HBO's been quite refreshing, because it was like, oh, okay. I felt freer for the first time. Yeah. People were saying the words we know and hear and expect in those contexts. And yeah, I think that's why it's great.
Speaking of Walking Dead, they also sometimes fall into the annoying thing of like the goodies might say a swear word occasionally, but like a righteous swear word, like bastard is quite a righteous swear word. Do you know what I mean?
Okay,
if you're
gotcha.
A bastard,
yeah.
You're a bad person.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like Negan in Walking Dead, who was the apex bad guy for a long time, he would F Jeff because he's a baddie, and so his language will be obscene because that's part of his, you know, his, again, it's this Puritan streak that's deep in America. Do you know what I mean?
If you're a bad guy, you do say the swearing. If you're a good person, you don't. Might, but yeah, like you say, there are certain words that are more acceptable. Yeah. So, you know, he finally listens, hopefully, you know, she walks away from him. I was really proud of her at that point. So I thought, you say it, because it is the Doug show and she is sometimes just pulled along.
But then she does that with a lot of relationships to an extent.
Absolutely. I think that is definitely one of her kind of, unfortunately, she seems to attract people like that. But also she, she's very good at allowing them to kind of drive and her just going. And I think that's because she doesn't always completely trust herself. And I think what has happened to her since medical school and all of that stuff was, you know, that she started to understand and trust herself. And that's why she might need a bit of time. And also that's why she's able to now say these words to Doug.
Yeah.
Maybe she was always scared of losing him before, you know, and now she's like, you know what? I'm okay alone. Like I'm a woman and I can roar, kind of, you know, all that stuff.
She can stand on her own 2 feet.
Exactly. And so she, as we kind of hinted to earlier when we spoke about Weaver, is dealing with a case of Mary and her partner. So Mary has come in. She has special needs or learning difficulties. She's pregnant. She's actually in labor. And the reason Carol went and got Weaver was because she's very worried, Mary, is that they're going to take her child off her. Her sister has told her because she's got special needs, they're going to, if she goes to the MAP ward, they will call in social services and the child will go, which is why Weaver joins them and says, okay, you can stay, we'll deliver the baby down here, which is just a lovely, and as you say, Weaver's just lovely with her. She comes in and she was so comforting and authoritative. I was like, okay, I believe I'm going to be okay here. I really felt that. And it was great. I love seeing Weaver when she's in these caring moments and these sweet moments as well. So it's Jeannie, Carolyn and Weaver, which, you know, there's a little dream team of its own going on here.
Yeah, it was such a brilliant moment. Like you say, with all the... So there's Carol, Anna comes in, Who else is in there? Kerry, and there's another female doctor, or is that it?
That's and then it. There's Coburn's not there because she's where is Coburn this week, Sean? You know.
I believe she was actually doing an excavation dig in Egypt. It was quite exciting, really. I believe it'll be shown in one of Carter's White Savior episodes.
Excellent. It's all those lovely, brilliant women, and they're all with this other woman who's about, you know, is giving birth, and he's very scared. Mm. And this is really interesting because the sister comes in and, you know, she wants to see Mary. And at first I thought Mary was going to be like, no, because she might try and force them to the kids. But Mary's very much like, yeah, she can come in. And it's lovely, you know, the baby is born, who's not really a baby, but a toddler. A toddler comes out.
Yeah, like in a talking. Where's this child been? Yeah.
I was like, that is the biggest child. That's practically half the size of this woman. And you're telling me this is a 6-pound newborn. And it was the most alert baby I've ever seen.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, you know, kind of when the baby is there directing the birth.
Yeah.
You know, you start to think like, you know, maybe we left this one a bit late.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. She was that scared. She kept it in there for 2 years. Baby comes out. And the first thing, and this is what ER does great, does really well, is it explores all these kinds of things around it about who can parent, who should be allowed to parent, what does a parent look like, what is society's kind of preconceptions about it, because the sister comes in and one of the first things she asks is the baby normal, which I think is a very what society would say, a very societal thing, I guess.
And it's like, we discussed before coming to the podcast, there is an awful lot of very outdated word. Mm-hmm. And it's something that has been used in ER before. And the word is retarded.
Yeah.
And it is used a lot in this episode.
Yeah. And it's so uncomfortable to see. And also, I think it's uncomfortable because I feel like when this aired, it was probably we weren't using that term anymore.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I knew enough then. This is 97. I knew that it was a slur at that point.
Yes. That's the only time it would ever be used, is if somebody was saying it to somebody else in a really horrible way. So I felt like it's so weird to watch such a developed country somehow in some ways be so.
I like that. And you have Carol and Mark are the ones using the words. Yeah. You're trying to like, it's definitely not being used as a slur in this context. It's being used
as
a perfectly acceptable descriptive term. And you're like,
yeah.
No.
It does bring all of those questions up. And it's really sweet because they obviously allow her to give birth downstairs and they're very good about obviously not. Well, they don't need to call a social worker is what Carol says, because, you know, they can look after her. And
yeah.
And this is where the sister pulls up and says, actually, you know, it's not what you think. I have to remind them of a lot of stuff. And they do leave it. They don't ever really.
They don't resolve it, do they?
Resolve it. Because I was a bit like, is the sister being truthful, or is the sister so worried she's kind of exacerbating things?
Is she just tired? Is she like, oh, I have to do this all the time, because she had to do it 3 or 4 times?
Yeah, exactly. And oh my God, now I'm going to have this baby too, but actually you might not. Like, that was the thing I wasn't entirely sure about. Because the way they resolved it, I mean, it was a really beautiful moment. Carol is basically showing Mary how to wrap the baby, and Mary's husband had to kind of wrap the baby up. And it's really sweet, you know, look, put them in the little burrito and you know, Mary does it after her. And that to Carol is enough to say that, yes, she can look after her, which was a bit like...
like there's more to it than that, Carol.
I felt like that. Like, I felt like that was a bit unresolved and I wasn't entirely sure why, but it allows for this beautiful moment where Doug kind of watches her wrap the baby up and how good she is. And she goes over to him and they kind of have a little joke about the fact that, you know, they can make it work. These people have come in and have got a kid and they're making it work and these two can't. And then he says, he apologizes and he tells her she's right. And he says, take as much time as you like. I'll wait. And he kisses her on the head and I cried.
It's so good.
I love that. Always say that to somebody. I will wait, you know.
Sharon, Yes. I'll wait.
Thank you.
Sure.
I won't.
Hurry up.
Yeah, no, I'm out of here. Bye.
He's gone. Bye. I just thought it was so lovely. It was the Doug and Carol we love. It was the, he's heard her, he's listened to her, and he's going to do, and he's going to support it, and he's going to be the best way. He's giving her that space so she doesn't feel trapped anymore, and she can just do what she, you know, get to the point where she's ready to marry him. very sweet. He was... I have to say, Doug made me laugh a lot in this episode because I really felt for him when he went into the doctor's lounge and Cynthia was there and he kind of went, are you okay? Like,
honestly, his face was a picture.
When like, she kept going and he kept trying to leave and she carried
on.
Yeah. I just thought that was such a brilliant comedic moment. Like,
and she goes like, oh, maybe he just cares too much. And he's like, no, it's not that.
It is. He loves me so much he can't deal with it. That's not how it is. Yeah. He's just not that into you, as the saying goes, you know.
Yeah.
I love him. Thank you.
I heard the story about so and so. Anyway, the Doug Carroll thing kind of ended in a really sweet, heartwarming place.
It did. And I'm glad it didn't drag on either. That's, you know, because obviously the longer it goes on, the more room for miscommunication. So I'm glad that it was, right, this happened. We had a bit of a Barney in the middle of the hall. We both had to think our love is stronger than this.
Yeah. And I think it helps as a viewer because nobody I know wanted this to happen, you know. And so to do it quickly and then it'd be done. Like, they dragged it out for week after week. I think as a viewer, you'd be like, forget this. Like, I'm not buying it anymore. I thought that was really cute. Should we talk about Benton and Corday?
Can we turn down the heat
hard
first?
In here?
Good Lord.
Word, what is, I'm just, they're just crackle on screen together. Yeah, they are just.
A lot of it's coming from Corday.
Absolutely. Oh, Benton just doesn't know what way to look in that room.
She's rolling an egg through her hands like it's his.
I mean, I'm going to start at the beginning. So Benton comes in late. He's very stressed out because Carla basically wants to put Reese into daycare and he's not pleased about this idea. And Corday's brilliant at kind of break, you know, she kind of just says, well, you're not going to get sympathy from me. I basically don't know who my parents are, you know, kind of thing.
She may as well have been raised by Anne Spar.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then she goes to shake his hand. And I thought it was just so brilliant. Because it was, she had like a little, you know, the buzzer thing to electrocute him. And I thought, and she just went, oh, there's this joke shop near my flat. And she said flat, which I loved. And I just love it. I love all that silliness. And I thought, God, this is what's great about you. You do not take its life seriously. You see a joke shop and you delight in all the little things it can do. Yeah. You know, Benton sees it and goes, waste of time. Does not compute, you know, who needs laughter? Whereas that's like, just what she is.
Well, anybody else, I'd find that kind of cheesy thing irritating. Her, go for it.
She just pulls it off.
Big plastic flower, sniffing my flower. Psh. Exactly. Spray me water, that's absolutely fine.
Exactly. Yep. She just has that. And then we have the scene, as you were discussing, you know, she's very much like, I want to buy you lunch, to Benton, who's very like, no, busy. She manages to, she doesn't give up, you know, you got to give her that. She does not take no for an answer. She goes and gets sandwiches and she goes to sit with him. And in the second week running, turns something that is not sexy at all. So last week it was darts. This week it's eating an egg. I mean, what's the least?
I also think eggs are not sexy at all.
Like, the way she eats it, the way she eats that egg.
And it's also, it's overcooked. It's like dark in the middle.
The yolk was grey. I'm like, the yolk shouldn't be grey.
But also I was like, oh my God, like, I don't think there is anybody who could make that sexy. And you made it so sexy, I felt like I shouldn't be watching her eat.
Yeah, felt like it should be black, you know, like redacted.
Yeah, black bar, or just like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not allowed to look at it. And she propositions him, which I love about
her.
She
lays it on so thick.
What she wants.
She's like, sometimes I just have to have something meaty to eat, or something like that, while she's basically looking at his crotch.
Yeah.
He takes such a long time to sort of, maybe to acknowledge anyway, what she's saying, as opposed to, I think a part of him gets, well, I can tell you which part, but a part of him gets it straight away.
Oh.
Yeah. He's like, oh my.
Yeah. Ooh. And he blushes.
Open that window, like, let the snow in here.
Yeah.
Because I imagine it's never a conversation with Benton, you know? It's a, you kiss somebody and you initiate it and it happens. It's never a, it's never talked about in this way. Like, she basically says, look, we're both professionals. I'm lonely. You're a professional man. I think you're attractive. Let's sleep together, you know, like, basically friends with benefits, which he's just very pious and what? No, but we're not in a relationship and we're not, you know, it kind of blows his mind, I think, a little bit. But she, what I love about is her is she's her own PR, you know. I am so good in bed, you know.
I won't disappoint.
Yeah. And she says later to him, you're missing out. You don't know what you're missing. And I just thought, wow, to have that kind of confidence about yourself, like, go for it, girl.
Well, I mean, and she's a surgeon.
It's a brilliant sort of vault fast. If it was a male surgeon with a female surgeon.
Oh, yeah. Like, if this was Romano to Corday.
Mm-hmm. It would take the male surgeon to have more charisma than could fit in a human body.
Yeah.
But Corday, it just works.
And I also think acting, I think even in other actors' hands, it might not have worked. I think there is something about her that, as you say, like with the joke shop stuff, you're like, all of a sudden, like last week, I was like, I want to play darts. I don't want to play darts, but she made it look so fun and sexy. And this week, you know, she's got the joke thing, she's laying it on, and it's definitely her acting and her, what she brings to this role that makes it work.
Mm.
If that was me in that break room, I would be questioning my sexuality. If she was laying on that thick, I'd be like, I will be bad, but let's go for it.
And I would be naked already.
And anyway, I would film everything.
It would be on an OnlyFans account within hours.
Seconds. Yeah.
Yeah.
And... Now, funny enough, Peter's last one-night stand arrives downstairs because some issues that he's been dealing with is that Carla wants to put Reese into daycare, and Benton doesn't feel that Reese is ready. And that's, you know, where all these different conversations are coming up, and, you know, some people have some ideas, some people have other ideas. And
I'm angry.
At who?
At Benton.
Okay.
Well, there's this moment. So the whole way he's huffing and puffing, but there's this moment where he says to Doug, my mom raised me. That's how it was. My mom raised me. Doug's very much like, that's a bygone era, you know, modern land. And I'm there thinking, if you are so worried about somebody, you know, being home with Reese, you be home with Reese. Mm-hmm. Why is it this assumption that she needs to give up her life and her career and her everything? If it is affecting you so much, you do it. That's what it was for me that annoyed me. Like, how dare you, that be your thing, that a woman should stay home?
Absolutely. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's just Benton through and through. It's because he can't see a universe where he's not a surgeon.
That's it. It's just impossible. And he gets quite annoyed at Carla. Carla just wants an answer because, you know, we think about Carla when he met her. So she's a business owner. She was obviously very motivated, very interested. She seemed to love her work. Why wouldn't she want to go back? Why wouldn't she? And his idea is, nope, she needs to be at home, so I'm going to take all this time. And I get it. Daycare and childcare and all that stuff is hideous, like, to think about. But you can't just go, I want somebody to be home with my kid and not be the one to be home. You can't put that decree down. You can't expect her to give up everything.
And yet he does. And I actually like the introduction of Roger here.
Yeah. He's the anti-Benton at this point, isn't he? So, you know, he goes out to see Reese, and Carla runs behind very scared and very, like, trying to get him to come back. And we obviously know something's going on. Oh, Reese is left with her, especially because earlier she said, oh, Reese is just with a friend.
He's like, oh, is it Delilah who smokes around?
I can't remember her name. Delphine, is it?
I think so, yeah.
Something like that. Anyway, yeah. And she's very vague about it, doesn't give any information. So, you know, he finally goes to the car and he finds a man is sitting in the car, and this man is very lovely and friendly. Carla tells him, you know, he's great with Reese. This is very serious. It's serious. And then you see him kind of have Reese and take him out and be with him. And he's just the anti-Benton, because he just looks very much like, we don't know anything about Roger yet, but he looks very much like, if Carla said to him, I want to go to work, he would stay home, if you you know, or he would go, great, let's sign the paper, you know. That's how it just seems in that moment. He seems very sweet and kind, and
yes, it's a different actor who'll be for now for Roger.
Yes,
yeah, he changes it. Does he change a couple of times, or is it just
I don't know.
The final Roger has already been in ER.
Has he?
Was in season one. Carter treated him.
Yes.
Yes, I cannot remember the character's name.
I won't expect you to.
But she was transgender, and she jumped from the roof of County General.
That's correct, yes. That's the final Roger, yeah.
His final form.
Yes.
So yeah, I just thought it was an again, it's that what I'm loving though about this is fatherhood, this kind of idea of fatherhood, and the things that normally the mom's worrying about, we're seeing Benton struggle with, like childcare and making these big decisions and your career and baby and all that stuff. We're kind of seeing through his eyes, which I just think is really, really interesting. And good on Carla, you know, good on her.
Yep. Yep.
Roger seems lovely, and he's great with the baby, and that's good on her.
Yeah.
But then Benton goes straight back upstairs after seeing that and goes, are you in the mood for darts? And Corday's like, just darts? And he's like, yes.
Darts.
So, you know, they're obviously... I think maybe there was something in him that was very much, I'm a dad, so I need to not think about romance because I need to keep myself free for reason. I don't want to have to introduce somebody in. And maybe seeing Carla with Roger gave him that flag of, actually, you can go ahead. And so he went up and said yes to Corday. Well, we don't know what he said yes to yet, but.
I think Corday is a fair idea, even if he doesn't.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she gets what she wants. It's a foregone conclusion, isn't it? True. Anytime she puts her eyes on something.
I think that's everything. Yeah. I liked this episode.
I think it
was good. There was a lot in it.
Me too.
I also like Jerry managed to get his day shifts back as long as he works a double, which is a long day.
Oh.
And then he's just asleep. on the admit desk,
exactly.
Like, not even just sort of like height, like sort of leaning over into his, sat on a chair, leaning into his arms.
And we have that just brilliant
lying on there. And he's a big guy, he takes a lot of room up.
And we have that brilliant Weaver Jerry moment where she like slams the desk to wake him up. And I thought, we're back, we are back in it, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's the app.
That's the app. Any Ebiers?
No Ibers from me.
I didn't this week. No, there was no one.
No, there was nobody that really jumped out for me at all. But I just want to talk about, so clonidine is the medication that Carter talks to Chase about.
Oh, yes.
Which is an alpha 2 adrenergic agonist. I've got that completely wrong. Basically, it can be used for all sorts of things like high blood pressure, ADHD, drug withdrawal, menopausal flushing, diarrhea, spasticity, and certain other pain conditions. But it's mainly used, it's used with drug withdrawal symptoms because it stops the effects that the withdrawal has on the sympathetic nervous system, like the fast heartbeat, the hypertension, the sweating, the hot and cold flashes. And also this thing called akathisia, which is sort of a movement disorder characterized by subjective feeling of inner restlessness and an inability to sit still. So, you know, when he was sort of, when Chase was sort of twitching around.
Yeah.
It's also got a sedative effect, which can be helpful for people going through withdrawal. But it can also have side effects, including insomnia. Which is also, it's a common feature of withdrawal symptoms. So you'll either be knocked out or so awake. It's a tricky one. It's clonidine. But some of the side effects include very, very rare gynecomastia, which is the growth of
a dinosaur
breast tissue. It's not, sadly, there is not a gynecomastia as, you know, a member of the ankylosaur family.
Sake.
I know, it's the growth of breast tissue in men.
Oh.
Yeah, but also there's lots of other things. So
it's not like
alopecia.
Gosh, so you're losing your
stuff,
hair.
Erectile dysfunction, dry mouth. Oh. Yeah, all sorts of stuff. But it sounds, obviously it's why they gave it to Chase. To ease the worst symptoms of drug withdrawal. Or some of them anyway.
There you go.
That's clonidine. Clonidine.
And we're calling it. Thanks for listening to our podcast about everything ER. Don't forget, you can find us on social media on Instagram at @YouSetTheToneMPod and @Set_Pod on Twitter. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe. And remember, you set the tone.